All right, on this week's episode, we are joined by Lou. We talk about laws we would change in the fitness industry if we were a dictator. So it's actually quite a lot of fun, a lot of different laws, a lot of different countries, some agreed upon, some not agreed upon. So enjoy.
Remember, today's podcast is brought to you by LSKD, a Brisbane-based clothing company that we believe aligns incredibly well with our brand.
Yeah, their activewear is taken over as one of the highest quality outfits on the market. And as well as that, their casual wear is next to none. I personally lived in it while I was in the UK. It's smart, it's casual, and it's stylish. So what more could you want? So from activewear to casual wear, make sure you check them out. You will also receive 10% off at checkout by using the code REBUILD. And by using them, you are helping us grow this podcast. And everyone is a winner, including you, because you will look fantastic. Let's get into the show. I'm James Beatty.
And I'm Sean Carroll.
And welcome to the Rebuild Health and Fitness Podcast.
For clarity.
Okay. Right. Rolling one.
Already rolling, two. Kate. Be more professional. All right. And welcome back. I like leaving stuff like that in the beginning. All right, welcome back to the Rebuild Health and Fitness Podcast. Is it 2023 yet when this will be out? Mm-hmm. All right, welcome to...
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. All right, another episode. What we're going to talk about today, something a little bit different. The laws you would change if you were a dictator.
In a gym.
In our industries, yeah. Not just any law, just overriding laws, like nude beaches.
That'll be like part two of this series.
I'd get rid of speed limits because I keep getting speeding fines.
Yeah. That's...
If we're going bigger picture, but we're not.
And this is why we're not.
Yeah, this is it. We'll go for hours.
Just a rant.
All right, just to make it clear, questions?
No.
I'm not speaking to people listening at home right now. I'm speaking to the people that I'm running the podcast with. No. We're joined today by Lou, physio, resident Rebuild physio. How are you, mate?
Going well, James. How are you?
Good, mate. Full time now at Rebuild?
Full time now at Rebuild as of about a month ago. So it's come a long way in the 4 years of doing it. And yeah, really grateful to you guys for the opportunity.
It's good, man.
It's fantastic.
Don't fuck it up.
It's good to have you.
I'll do my best. Although, mind you, since coming on full time, I spend half my time just signing for packages that are due for James.
For who?
For James.
For who? It's for my wife. Every day. It's becoming a bit of a running joke
it's
now.
It's literally every day, though.
It literally is a strong word.
I don't use that word frivolously.
I thought you were going to say literally again.
Yeah. I use it correctly, and it has been literally every single business day.
Hope you're listening.
She won't be.
Yeah. All right, so laws we would change. Let's see. Sean, I'm going to come to you first, Sean.
Right, first one for me will be no gym gloves. No gym gloves.
What do you mean?
You know those like weird little no-fingered gloves?
Oh, yeah, they're like weights gloves for those milk classes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just not a fan. I think if you need them, you've got other issues.
I sort of agree. We have got a couple of people that have started here that have tried to wear them.
It doesn't last long.
I try and wait until their cooling off period of their contract is over before I tell them to take those off.
Hey, man, we don't do that here.
Yeah. It's like a squat pad for your neck.
Yes.
On your fingers.
Second rule. That's also
that. Yeah, they are... pretty gross. I hate them.
I think they're probably just a lot less useful for the type of training we do here too, right? Like in terms of if you're doing high rep gymnastics movements on a bar and things like that, they just tend to slip. Like your gymnastics grips are just way better, way more fit for purpose.
They look nasty. They look nasty too. Like mittens. Right, Lou?
Yeah, so I was thinking that I would... implement a watchdog for health and fitness accounts on social media with more than 10,000 followers. That's an arbitrary number that I've pulled out, but I feel like any account that's big has pretty significant reach and therefore should be subject to scrutiny.
What does watchdog mean? What do you mean?
A watchdog, so like an authority responsible for monitoring what these accounts do, the types of things they put out there.
I thought you meant a literal dog. I was like, that would not work.
No, I don't think you'd be able to do the job. But the rule being, the more followers, the more scrutiny the account would be under. and then basically looking for claims that are based on either known misinformation or insufficient evidence. And I feel like, again, the account should be then penalised with either like a shadow ban or some sort of demonetization or a fine.
These are the penalties you were talking about.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like we should be imposing penalties.
Lou's going to step further and start creating his own laws.
Okay,
and books.
Yeah. Because look, I think that it is an enormous problem, and I think you guys can obviously attest to this within nutrition and fitness and strength and conditioning as well, where you have these accounts that have enormous reach, like absolutely massive reach, and peddling some really dubious stuff. And just to add some nuance to this, like I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, you must have a citation for absolutely every claim you ever make. But if you are claiming something more from experience or practice or evidence, you need to make that clear rather than saying definitively, I think this is the case, I think this is better, I think this is risky. It should be more like in my experience and make that obvious versus being like, no, this is wrong, this is bad.
Yeah.
And I guess the account that comes to mind for me, Squat University. I mean, 2.4 million.
Well, a lot of people love it.
Followers. Oh, and look, to be fair, like I'll start with a compliment. Like I think that he's done a very good job increasing accessibility of information around weightlifting and probably encouraging people to lift weights. But I do think that some of the content he puts out is based on really sketchy stuff, especially his claims around footwear.
Mm.
I don't know if you're familiar with all the things he said, and I'm not going to go on a deep dive on it now, but I just think that, and the other thing that he does is anytime he's challenged ever on any claim he makes, he just ignores the challenge. He only engages with positive responses. And then he'll claim to be evidence-based, but he'll be citing some really sketchy stuff that doesn't really support the claim he's making. And I feel like that's an example where I don't think he should be incentivized for that behavior. I think it's kind of a flaw in the Instagram algorithm that his stuff gets promoted above, I guess, better sources.
We spoke about this. I suppose when your name is Squat University, there's only so much content you can make about squat.
Yeah.
Like, so he's going to have to reach pretty far outside the box. But everyone can go like this and go a little bit worse. Look at the functional patterns guy. Some of the stuff he said at the beginning, you might go, oh, that's interesting. And now you're like, you're wacky.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, again, I'm not trying to put a, like, stamp out anyone making claims that aren't backed up by 20 citations, right? But I do think that
I believe.
Yeah. Exactly. It should be more like I believe, or this is something I observe, or this is a theory, rather than presenting something as like irrefutable fact or claiming that there's evidence for something that doesn't exist. Andrew Huberman is another one that I think he started out great in terms of when he was talking on his subject matter, but then he's obviously increased his reach and I mean, this probably speaks to another one of my laws, which I can go into right now. I think that we should punish people for engaging in promiscuous expertise, where it's effectively a law to get people to just stay in their lane a little bit more when it comes to the claims that they make.
Yeah.
A really prominent example, other than Huberman, would be Jordan Peterson.
I know you're going to say him.
Yeah. He's again, like, his specialty is psychology, and yet he's out there spruiking the carnivore diet.
Well, I think that's through an illness of himself, right? But he did that huge video on the food pyramid and the reason why obesity exists, which was, it was just wrong, like plain wrong. And you had every good research nutritionist scientist come out and just say, I like him, but that's total bullshit.
And that's the thing. Like, I think that when you have that platform, you have a responsibility to, I mean, stay in your lane with the claims that you make and the things you promote. But then if you are going to promote stuff from another field, it should be through the lens of like putting another expert up and saying, look, hey, check out this content, right? Versus like, yeah, making those claims about the food pyramid, which he's not really qualified to speak on.
Mm.
But I guess that's what happens when you gain reach and you gain notoriety and I guess you become a bit of a legend in your own lunchbox and you, I guess, fool yourself into thinking that you have the right to speak on those matters.
On everything.
Yeah, on everything. So I,
and so factual.
Yeah.
With so much confidence.
Absolutely.
But if you say anything with enough confidence, someone will believe you.
Completely right. Completely
right. Social algorithms perpetuate the need to post inflammatory content though, right? Because the algorithms prioritize content that gets engagement. Engagement doesn't mean likes. That means comments. Mm. So if you put up something completely wrong and people comment, and like even you put a type on there, don't say, don't you mean you apostrophe RE? That will get you more content, more prominence in the algorithm. So putting up something that is factually incorrect or is contentious or inflammatory is always going to get you more reach.
But you can have clickbait, right? We spoke about this last week with the clickbait of a title doesn't have to be what the actual video or content is about. Like I've been looking at Teslas for a little while and all the videos I click on is like five reasons not to buy a Tesla. And I'm like, really interesting. But that's not what the video is about. People are like, I absolutely love them. But if there was five things, then these might be it. So it's, I sort of get clickbait a little bit, but as long as the content isn't wrong.
Yeah, correct. And I do agree with that as well. I think that for good information to get out there, we do need to play the game a little bit and try and engage people with something catchy or something that gets them hooked. But then the content needs to have some substance to it. And I suppose, again, that could be another function of my watchdog. You know, they could overhaul that algorithm and we could maybe create some...
They would have a busy job.
They would. Oh, absolutely. And again, this is purely hypothetical and a thought experiment, clearly, because it's probably not very practical.
Yeah.
To implement,
yeah. How are you funding this? Where are you taking funding from to fund?
We're not going that far.
No. We won't go that far. But I guess the reason I'm putting this forward is just so that listeners can maybe just reflect on their sources of information a little bit more, and perhaps think, well, maybe just because this account has an enormous reach, I shouldn't just trust everything that they put out there and say.
Well, I'll go off the back of that with one of mine. So, no filters or Photoshops in all countries, especially when promoting a product for financial gain. I know some countries have started putting laws on their social medias. There's things that I will allow. So I will allow people to get a pump and use good lighting. Okay, so I will allow that because that is you. It's just the best version of you.
It's you in a moment in time. Yes.
Exactly, right? So I will allow that. But what I allow is for people to tinker with things. Okay, even like the slightest filter. All fillers are gone. And I know some females that I know quite well, and they will do it and they'll put a filter on to shave and put a makeup on. But that's a part of the problem. Do you know what I mean? That is part of the problem. So no filters, no Photoshops.
Wait, but like if you look at food adverts, they use mashed potato for ice cream because ice cream melts. So on the shoes.
Yeah, but no one's looking at it going, I wish I was a mashed potato.
But is or that like you're not going to get, you're not going to get, like, yeah, you're not going to get point?
For your face or body.
So he's talking about promoting.
What's the difference of wearing makeup and putting a filter on?
Well, you can put makeup on. Are you willing to go to that effort?
Can't be bothered though. So
we'll just deal with the fact that your face looks like that.
My face looks great in any light. Thank you very much.
And especially with your body. No Photoshops.
Yeah, I like that. And I suppose something that could go hand in hand with that too would be perhaps mandatory disclosures around PED use as well, because it's the same thing, right? If you're engaging in PED use, but then attributing your success to the use of a supplement, that's really dishonest. And again, I'm not saying don't engage in PED use. Like if you want to do that and can do it safely, by all means, but you should disclose it because you shouldn't mislead people like that. You shouldn't tell them, I took this creatine and now I look like Liver King. You know what I mean? Like,
get off his back.
I'm really into bro. Remember bro science? I'm really into bro science again. He came up on my feed and it's just like constantly coming up now. And he's like something about, what did he say for? If you're on steroids, you should let everyone know that you're on steroids, or, you know, there should never be a question if you're natty or not, if you're on steroids, because the poison you go on steroids is so you don't look natty anymore. So it makes complete sense. It's like, why the fuck would you want to go on steroids and look the same as everybody else? You want to be known for being on steroids if you're on steroids. So just fucking admit you're on steroids. And then he says, like, if someone looks like they're on steroids, guess what? They're on steroids. Everyone's on steroids, which is fair. Majority of people, or a lot of people, there is these maybe one percenters, but they're a lot rarer than what you think. Like, if it's an incredible physique, the majority of the time they're juiced up. Because they're so easily accessible, steroids. But yeah, that would be another thing for like a filter, right? It's the same sort of thing.
It's exactly the same logic. It's not misrepresenting results.
And I follow people online that are on steroids, that obviously on steroids, that don't hide the fact on steroids. And their content is actually really, really good. Like, I really like it. And they're jacked.
Okay.
I would mandate... So mine's a bit... Hang on.
Mine's not written down.
I would make water freely available everywhere. So in shopping centres, have to have bubblers, like have it on the roadside. Can't charge for water. You have to have it at publicly accessible points all the time.
Yep. in Spain, I'm pretty sure it's a law, if you ask for water anywhere, they have to give you for free.
Yeah, right.
Fun fact. I don't know if that's even true. But I remember being in Spain and hearing about this. Yeah, free water, I guess.
Can you get free water anywhere anyway? You go to a restaurant, get a bottle of water? Or
you do in Australia. Water. In the UK, that's not really a thing.
Oh, really?
No.
But even shopping centres, there aren't necessarily water fountains to drink at. It's like you have to buy bottled water. Or, yeah, it's just should be more regulated so that it is like every, I don't know, 500 metres or something.
You get thirsty.
Public spaces. I get so thirsty.
I got another another one off. It is Friday. She's always thirsty on a Friday. All right. I got another one just off the back of what we're talking about. So I think in school, which I'll be interested in, there's certain things that we should teach. Okay. And we should teach sort of the art of critical thinking, I think would be a really good one. So that is like the objective analysis and evaluation of an issue in order to form a judgment. So a couple of things from there is like open-mindedness to one extent. And then it's like respecting evidence and reasoning would be the second one. And then B, obviously considering another people's perspective but and having sort of cognitive flexibility. But then it always goes back to that second point of respecting evidence and reasoning.
It's good. But people are dumb.
That's why we should have it in school to just practice it a little bit or to have better conversations.
I think that's massive. I think that's really important because, even when you look into some of the research around like the really extreme conspiracy theories, so the stuff that's really out there, and if you think about it rationally, it really falls flat pretty quickly. Mm. People who buy into that actually test more poorly on cognitive reflection tasks, which is like the ability to think about your thinking,
yep.
Which is like an aspect of critical thinking, right? So, yep. So I think like, again, exposing people to that fairly early in life and regularly throughout schooling is probably a sound strategy. But again, it's all in the way it's taught, right? It needs to be engaging because it's a pretty dry topic for
but again, some people. Another thing, like obviously they do teach psychology, but a lot of time, I know in the UK, it's like you choose to maybe in like year 9 and 10 when you can choose your subjects, you can choose psychology. But maybe that should be something because there's a lot of psychology is not fact. Okay, it's about conversations or opinions and then better. And I think if we start with sort of psychology, then critical thinking becomes a little bit easier. I also think sort of the psychology around sort of nutrition and nutritional values maybe.
Even just nutritional values though, like that as an educational point would be – it doesn't have to go as deep as the psychology behind it. Like, just explain it. They do home ec where you get taught food. You do PE where you get taught sexual health, but you don't get taught actually what, like...
You got taught sexual health in PE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Did you not?
No, we just got taught that as another subject.
Whole subject.
Put a condom on a banana and off you go.
I never got to do that.
Yeah, we never did that.
With my mouth. No.
Extracurricular.
I got a trick.
But just nutrition in general is not addressed really in any subject, or it wasn't ages ago when I was at school.
A little bit.
Barely, though.
A little bit. But maybe go a little bit deeper into like thermodynamics and maybe from an evidence-based standpoint. But what other things would you like to see taught in schools?
Ooh. I'd like to see them do some more like mandatory, say like camps, like outdoor sort of adventure stuff.
Like Duke of Ed style stuff.
Yeah, like we did in grade 10, we did like a 5-day wilderness camp up the sunny coast where we had to like start at one point.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
We had to hike like 30K camp, like all that kind of stuff. Just generally just doing just a bit of hard work and spending time outside. And, you generally have to start relying on each other to help get the work done because, you know, on a 30K hike when you're carrying like 20 odd kilos on your back, there's certain people who can't carry that, and people step up to help each other out and just like more enforce like sort of team building. I think it just creates a little bit more of that resilience muscle to let people know they're not super fragile.
Yeah.
But also that you're in it together, that sort of tribal mentality.
And have you seen that Limitless level with Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Because he does one on there where he's trying to look after his brain, and pretty much this neuroscientist takes away his phone, takes away everything, and gives him a map, and he sort of goes off and it's supposed to be really good. So if you can take that away, I think that's good. And I think trying more sports or getting outside is good, because there's a lot of kids in my school anyway that hated playing rugby and football, so they would always just sit out. But I don't believe that there isn't a sport for everyone that they will enjoy. So I think the more sports that we can do, or the more physical activity we can do that isn't just like contact or anything like that, I think could be a positive.
I think some sort of martial art, and at least at a early ages, again, body awareness, discipline, teaches you not super fragile. Like, there's heaps of value in that.
Mm.
I felt like my school experience was very centered around sport. If anything, I was like, okay, well, I want to learn how to do my taxes, how to change my oil in my car.
Yeah.
You know, life skills, whereas sport was such a huge part of everything. And I feel like it is in Australia. So I don't.
It is to like, I think in primary school, you have like mandatory sport days. But I think from year 9 onwards, that sport becomes an elective. Even like when we were in year 8, they still had like full like cohort sporting like blocks mapped out where you'd go play touch or play soccer or swimming or something like that. But then after grade 9 onwards, like you could sort of specialize a little bit more into subjects that you wanted to do.
Maybe it was because I did a lot of extracurricular sport as well, because I did basketball in the mornings before school. Mm. But then we had inter-school sports every week as well, and everyone had to do that. And I felt like the non-sporty people were kind of shoved to the side. It was like, oh, you just do this, like you just play on the playground, you know. It was, we can't think of anything for you. So I felt like that was a really big part of my educational experience.
Oh, mine too. But I think people definitely get left behind rather than like, hey, let's find something that you like. It's just like, you're out.
Yeah, giving them opportunities for a broader range of exposures to some kind of physical activity. Like even if it's something as basic as like a walking program, you know, like
something.
It's just something to tick the box and I guess foster a healthy relationship with exercise and movement. Versus like as Kate said, having those kids who maybe don't engage in a certain type of activity being pushed to the side and, oh, there's nothing for you, so whatever.
Yeah. There's always something. Yep. I've got quite a few here.
So I've got one that's maybe a little bit more physio specific. I think manual muscle testing should be illegal, punishable by a $2,000 fine.
Go on, explain yourself.
So what I mean by manual muscle testing is assessing strength using my hands. So I say, Sean, push against me.
Nah, yeah, complete. Oh,
push against me. Oh, okay, yeah, you're weak.
Yeah.
It's 2022. There are handheld dynamometers and strain gauges and things like that that you can buy that do this for you and allow you to quantify strength. There is no room for a manual muscle test anymore at all. And it's grossly insufficient in contexts such as ACL rehab, where we know that getting back a certain level of quad strength and hamstring strength and the like is really important for good long-term outcomes and preventing them from getting a second injury. If I'm judging someone's return to play decision of how hard can you push against my hand, I'm grossly underdoing them, right? And I've got no idea how strong they really are, and I'm just guessing.
Like, I did it to prove a point with a new member a little while ago that came in who's been seeing a physio who was doing exactly that. And everything she was saying didn't really make sense to me. So I just proved the point and said, hey, can you just press against my hand? And then I didn't let her move my hand. And then I said, can you do it again? And then I just let her budge it a little bit. And I was like, whoa, yeah, big differences in strength. It's like, no, I just haven't fucking held my hand there enough. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I can dictate anything. And it's the same with, and it's an easy thing if you're doing that for a physio that maybe isn't very good at their job. It's the same as, oh, you probably built muscle and lost fat. It's like, oh, push against my hand. Oh, you're moving it this week. So much stronger this week. You're really improving.
Or you're getting worse. As a physio, I'm doing a great job.
It's like, no, you're just bullshitting your way through life.
Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that getting stronger is the answer in all context, but I am saying that in those specific situations, you damn sure should have a way to actually measure it and be very objective about that.
Yeah.
And again, you like, these things are so readily available. They're not that expensive anymore. The cheapest option is to buy a crane scale of catch.com. It's like the scale you put on the back of a ute.
Catch.
And it measures. It
you
just measures
got
how
one in the post on the way here.
Probably. Yeah. It just measures how heavy a thing is that you're putting into your ute. Like, and that's awesome. It's a load cell. You just have to watch the screen as they're pushing or pulling against it. Like, so I just think that if you're not willing to invest in something like that at a minimum, to measure these things, you need to refer these types of patients who have those needs to someone who does.
Yeah.
Like, you should not be trying to manage their return to sport without that tool.
You always want to know that you're getting better. You should never be guessing. Same strength. Are you getting stronger? Shouldn't, in our world, it's like, well, yes or no. It is objective. It is. It's not really subjective.
Absolutely.
It's like, is my injury getting a little bit better? Because I feel subjectively like it's the same amount of pain, but I can see your load is increased by this much.
Exactly.
Great, I know I'm improving.
And I think that that's a really important factor, right? Giving people a sense of progress. It's like, oh, it all feels much the same, but then you can use these things to show them, well, hang on, you're putting out a heck of a lot more force before it starts to hurt, or, you know, these sort of things. And that's inherently reassuring and encouraging. So
it's less stress on both people.
Yeah.
By knowing that.
Absolutely.
So if someone's coming in every week and you're not measuring it with the same pain, nothing's ever improving week on week. That's stressful for the physio and it's stressful for the person.
Absolutely. And I guess too, in contexts like nerve injury, for example, these tools are really useful for actually seeing, is the condition deteriorating, right? And then I have a number to back that up versus, well, how hard can you push on my hand this week? It's just it's a rubbish assessment.
Yeah.
Has no place in modern clinical practice.
But I think it's good. I think this is good to talk about, because even I signed up a woman yesterday that I've sent to you, who's been seeing a physio for quite a long time, with a similar injury that has no objective outcome to what it is. So she has no idea for the amount of years if she's actually getting better. You need to know something.
Yeah.
So if you have a physio or whatever now, Lou won't say it, but and they're not measuring absolutely anything and they're just guessing, then I think you need to go somewhere else.
Yep, I would agree with that, and particularly or especially in the context of like returning to sport or returning to high level physical activity after a surgery or something along those lines, like you should have these objective testing measures in place to help guide what you're doing. It's just that simple.
Yep.
I'll go one.
Let's go.
Three strike for group classes or group gyms that do like group classes. Yeah. We'll have a three strike rule for late arrivals. And on your third strike, you get punished with a max effort 2K row.
Or whip.
Or a whip.
Yeah.
I was going to say whip, but I thought that would be frowned upon.
If the person you know is going to be late, fine. Or like if the person speaks to you and like, hey, I finished work at this time, I might
three
be 5 minutes late. It's fine. But if consistent, listen, you don't speak to me about lateness. I think everyone in this world knows my pet hate is lateness. So I'm more, I think three is very kind.
Yeah.
So why don't you, like,
here we go, Miss Later.
You are the dictators of this gym. Why don't you enforce that here? You People can.
Just, no.
No.
You can.
I know I can.
So why don't you?
Because I don't care enough.
I do. I've got people in and sat them down in this office and spoke to them about it. But it doesn't mean that we want to
publicly shame them.
Put someone on a 2K row.
Yeah, kick them out. But yeah, I have spoke to them.
But why mandate that universally?
Because you get three strikes. Because sometimes it does disrupt the flow of class. It is annoying for a coach who is running it.
And not sometimes.
Repeat, massively. Repeat offenders. Like if it happens like three times, like they're taking the piss.
Oh, no, I agree with
you. And how you walk in when being late.
You better have your head down tell you, apologetically.
We'll tell you a lot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Don't even die. Don't get me going. But Sean, I completely agree with that one.
Oh, I got another one.
Just while they're rolling, let's keep them going.
You should, for any sporting or sort of, I guess, gym-related injury, you're banned from seeing a doctor unless you see a physio first. I've had so many people over the years who've like, you know, even at footy, like someone will strain their calf, they'll go see a doctor. Like, oh yeah, he just told me to take these and then I can be back. I was like, no.
Or straight for a scan.
Yeah, straight for a scan.
Yeah, I think to weigh in on that from a professional perspective, I suppose, like I feel bad for GPs in that I think they are incredibly overworked and they have a really large amount of ground to cover, right?
Yeah, I'm doing them a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you are. This is what I'm saying. So I would say and a good GP will agree with me in saying this, that they're not super well equipped to deal with musculoskeletal problems just by the nature of their education. And I was actually chatting with a GP not so long ago and he was telling me about how going through the catalogue of continuing education courses, the options that were there for the year specifically dealing with injuries and musculoskeletal problems, there was next to nothing. He was like, there was some real wacky thing that he was like, there's no – I can't even remember specifically what it was, but he said there was no value in doing it. It didn't answer a lot of the common questions that he has. So like the best GPs tend to just refer you to a trusted physio or other clinician anyway, right?
So we don't want to, we want to take that away though, give them their time back. They shouldn't even have to go to a GP then get sent to a physio.
Right. So that's what ties into mine, because I said allied health and preventative health should be subsidized by Medicare, because preventative health would take the burden off the health system, right? So having physios subsidized by Medicare then would alleviate some of the stress on the GPs.
Yeah, and that's definitely correct, and I'm all for that too. I think that that funding model needs to change a lot, because at the moment you can get on a care plan if you have a chronic condition, and that doesn't have to be an injury. That can be like asthma, right? That would make you eligible, and you could get 5 Medicare rebated sessions, but it doesn't cover the cost of an appointment, right? In terms of, I think it rebates about $56 per session, and you get 5 a year. And they're supposed to split that across multiple disciplines.
Yeah.
So you think about a lot of these people who are in the situation where they have a chronic disease and maybe a lot of comorbidities that go with that. That doesn't go very far. And most practices, just to keep the lights on and pay their overheads and things like that, they can't bulk bill those. And if they do bulk bill those, they get overrun with EPC referrals, because GPs are like, oh, cool, these guys, they don't have to pay out of pocket. And then your business goes down the tubes, right? So they do need to change those funding models. The other thing that gets me is the fact that I can only refer people for a very limited number of scans and have that covered by Medicare. There's only a few, right? And I think the thing is, if we probably, and I don't have any actual evidence to back this up, but I think this is more just me speaking generally, I'd say that I probably would utilize imaging for injuries a little bit more responsibly than some doctors would. In the sense that I use it very selectively and only when needed. So by giving me the right to bulk bill, I'm not putting a big burden on the system. But what happens is, like, somebody comes to me with a clear ACL injury. It's got every indication to have an MRI to confirm the diagnosis and look for other problems. I have to send them to their doctor to get a referral for an MRI so that they're not out of pocket $300. Like, I can refer them directly, but they have to pay $300.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is just stuffing around and creating this middleman situation.
And misplacing the funds then, because then you're paying the GP instead of just...
Yeah. Well, plus they're paying me for the initial assessment too, right? So it just ends up like a massive stuff around for people. So they
I suppose there's only so many scanning machines too, so they don't want people just... Because a lot of people would just send them straight for a scan all the time and then deal with whatever injury comes up, right? But you could make it so there was like a system where if you sent them for, you believe is an ACL injury, which you should be good enough to go, hey, I think this is a bloody ACL injury, and it is, then you shouldn't have to pay. If it isn't, then you're wasting my time. Pay the bill.
You pay.
That's tricky. As in, sorry, the clinician pays? Is that what
you're saying? One of you paying.
Yeah, mate. Dictator.
Yeah, I do what I want.
Well, no, I think I'm more.
It's over. Podcast done. See you later.
Probably to be fair to clinicians and patients in that situation, that there'd probably just be more of like an auditing thing in place, where it's like if somebody's sending for far too many scans based on looking at the average number of scans that physios refer for.
You can have 5.
Yep. And there's too many like negatives coming back for suspected ACL tears.
Well, how do they audit GPs? They regulate the amount of stuff GPs send people for, do they not?
That's happening more. And I've actually...
Good at this. Voters in. Labour. Yeah. Are we Labour?
I believe recently there was...
You're a fat cat business owner. You're liberal.
I'm North Korea.
Yeah. There was some GPs who were actually stung for inappropriate imaging referrals, where they had to actually pay back the cost of these investigations.
What were the inappropriate images?
Oh, I think it was more...
Oh, doctors sending dick pics out.
No, not quite. Not quite. Oh, God, this is getting derailed badly.
All right.
Wait, I want to take my bit further about preventative health, though.
Okay.
So when I was in hospital, there was the young, relatively healthy people, but then there were people with, like, diabetes and lupus that were just abusing their kidneys. And I think Medicare should be subsidizing preventative health. So it's like I don't treat my – sometimes I do, but I don't treat my body like a garbage disposal. Whereas there was a woman in my room
who fact check that with your watchdog.
She had stents put in. She had diabetes. She smoked. She had all these, like, a lot of stuff. She was very overweight. She was really fucking rude too to the nurses. But someone like that, if you like subsidized a bit of their health journey and got them maybe doing PT or speaking to a nutritionist and investing in that preventative health measures surely that would take a bit of the burden off the hospital system. Mm. So funding and educating people better on those elements, I think, would be a really good thing for society, in my society as a dictator.
Agree. You can do whatever you want in your dictatorship.
Kate's utopia, we'll call it.
So I would go, I would get every scientist working around the clock, right, to create a tablet that would allow your pump to last 24 hours.
Oh, yeah, that'd be sick.
Especially on, like, weekends and holidays and stuff.
I feel like that's pretty mean for the scientists. Like, don't they want to go home and sleep and
solve the problem.
You can. I told you, you can do whatever you want. You can send your scientists home. Mine do not go home until this is created. Do you know what I mean? Imagine how good that. Do you know, like, when you just do a workout, like, yesterday, and you just, like, such a good pump, and you're just like, oh, it's going to go. And then another bro science thing yesterday, he's like, what they say is like, a pump is just a look into your future, but the future you will never see, because when you get to your future, your pump is bigger, so you'll be forever chasing.
Like heroin.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't care what you do in your country, but we don't do heroin in mine. No heroin. So that would be, yeah, that would be amazing. That'd be a great supplement. Yeah. I'd OD though.
I'd OD.
I suppose that Viagra, could the Viagra do? Nah. Would that be specific to?
I have a feeling it's specific. I haven't.
Just tweak it. But how do they make it specific just to that area?
I don't know, to be honest.
It was an accident.
It was a byproduct, wasn't it? It was heart medication.
Yeah, right? But not now.
They
now
found people getting bonus.
I think.
And they're taking it. It was like, oh, you got a bad heart, mate. Take this.
I don't think you just take Viagra and get a boner.
No.
You still have to get aroused first, and then your boner stays, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. My mate bring a bunch of... bring a bunch back from Colombia.
Did you all take them?
Yeah.
In school?
All together. Nah.
Yeah.
This was like when we were like...
Cruel Friday night
20,
at mine.
20. My eyes went like fucking super bloodshot.
Really?
It was crazy. Worked.
Did it?
Worked. Well, it was working anyway, so it was hard to sell.
I feel like my watchdog's about to come down on you guys for promiscuous expertise, talking about Viagra.
Not mine. Yeah, that's it.
Google it.
All right. Next. I can go a couple. No one... Oh, this was a bit of a tough one. No one can take the piss out of anyone exercising.
No. Okay, you can have that, but I'm going to change mine.
Like, no videos online. Do you know, like, the mocking videos when people are in a gym and people, like, filming them and mocking them?
Are you talking about the gym fails?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, I'm talking about people in a gym, like, within a gym that are exercising that may just be doing terrible form or things that are a little bit wrong, and then they're passed around the internet and sort of judged and everyone's sort of thrown shade at them.
What kind of shitbags are doing that, though?
Loads of people. There's millions of those videos online. But then I got sent a video yesterday by my friend about his sister, and it was the worst technique I've ever seen, like, in a clinic. It was really bad. But I also don't blame her. I think fair play to her, because she's doing what they're told, but the coach behind it is absolutely stealing a living.
Watchdog. Yeah. The watchdog has to crack down on this.
He's seen the video.
No, the Lou's watchdog is going to crack down on taking the piss.
Yeah.
On the taking the piss videos. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's pretty poor form, and I mean, especially when, like, we know physical activity is such a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, you know, it's very hard for people to engage with exercise and do it consistently. So chances are, if somebody is doing something a bit whack or a bit funny or a bit unconventional, they may not just have much experience doing that sort of stuff yet. Maybe they're learning.
Go and talk to them. Yeah, don't film them without their permission and then put it online.
I mean, with that being said, I'm probably a little bit against going to speak to them as well, just because I think that there's too, like, how many stories do you hear about the guys coming up to, it's usually mansplaining, right, where a dude comes up to a girl exercising and tries to critique her form.
But near enough every gym in the world, there is professionals within that gym.
Yeah, yeah. And I think especially if somebody is doing something that is unsafe, like just completely inappropriate use of equipment or whatever it may be, I think it is worth somebody just tapping them on the shoulder, right?
Because then a lot of people, again, goes into one of my next points, is that we should never judge people for exercising, right? Whatever shape, what size, what they're doing, as long as they're doing something or they're trying. Like, I'll go for a drive and I'll see someone running that might be really, really overweight, and the first thing I think is like, fuck yeah, do it. Let's get there. And I think there needs to be support. So this is happening a little bit now, but next one was like, all companies should include a range like an activewear range for all different shapes and sizes. I see arguments online about promoting people being overweight, which I think is a bit silly, and I completely disagree with it. Some people say, well, that's not very motivating. And again, I think they're missing the point. It's like, how are we supposed to get everyone exercising when they don't even have
clothes
or nice clothes so they can wear and actually go exercising?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great point. And those arguments are just dumb when you consider like a lot of the evidence around the link between obesity and being overweight and actual health outcomes. They're a little bit, it's a little bit tenuous when you consider all the other things that will contribute, and the fact that now you've got movements like Health at Every Size, where it's like, well, if somebody is, you know, overweight, say, but they're nailing every other health behavior, chances are they're not at high risk of health issues. So again, we should be facilitating people to be comfortable in their own skin and being able to move and do things, and having an active wear range that suits is probably an important aspect of that.
And representation is massive.
100%. That's very true. That's very true. Actually seeing people going out and doing it is motivating.
And what I am seeing now is a lot of brands, even like LSKD, who we're sponsored by, they're doing it a lot. But what we don't see much of at the moment is for men in this space. I don't want to be like, oh, poor men, but you don't see it for men. No. You're seeing this big trend of like for women now, you know, at every size and active wear, it is getting better, but I still think more brands need to do it a lot more. But for men, you don't see it at all yet. So you're getting a lot of men and you see an Instagram and they're all ripped and jacked.
I think LSKD does have size diverse men.
I think LSKD are doing a lot
and
of things.
Like there are some brands, but it is, you're right, it's very small. And so hopefully with the trend in females, the males will follow.
Because again, it's really important.
Yeah.
Another law done. Lou, got any more?
Yeah, so I suppose something that I'd like to ban, again, within the physio field, is like blaming somebody's pain or problem on over or underactive muscles. It's just not, most of the time when this happens, we've got a lot of different injuries and a lot of different issues where there were theories that we used to explain them once upon a time, where we've gone, oh, okay, well, it's because this muscle is overactive, this muscle's underactive, which is pulling you into a position that puts more load on this, and so on and so forth. I won't go into every single one, but there's a bunch of them, right? And the thing that I want to put across is these things are just theories. And they're often based on like very limited evidence, but they've been widely adopted because they're easy to understand and they're easy to implement. But I guess a lot of the time when I hear somebody say they were told this, it was never even tested. It was just, oh, you have pain in your neck, you've got overactive upper traps. And I'm like, so how was that tested? Did they connect you to an EMG?
Something like that. That's what they'll say.
Well, but you know, but not even. Like half the time they're not, right? It's just purely, oh, you have neck pain, therefore you have, or you have back pain, you must have a weak or underactive core. And again, I'll ask, like, how is that tested? It's not even being assessed.
But this is overly common. Like, it's not like only a few, it's overly common. I'd say 90% of the people that come here that have had pain and seen physios all come with the same thing. If they have back pain, they're either their glutes aren't working as well as what they want, or their core isn't as active as what it needs to be.
And those explanations, just if we think about it's so common, right? And back pain is as big a problem as it's ever been, right? Mm. If we look at the epidemiology and things like that and how common back pain is, it's if this stuff was working really well, surely the rate would be going down because of how widespread this information is. The one that I saw that got my gall last week was a physio claiming that you should do this test to see if you're going to get back pain. And what he did was he said, lie down on your tummy, put your hand on the area where your butt meets your hamstring so you can feel both of them. Now lift your leg in the air. So for those at home, you're lying down on your belly, you're lifting your leg backwards. And he said, if you feel your butt turn on first, he's like, that's great. If you feel your lower back or you feel your hamstring go before your butt, he's like, come see me and we'll fix it. And I'm like, oh, look,
here's the answer.
Yeah, fair play to him. Great for business. But when you actually look into that, it's based on a very old theory around optimal muscle activation, which has been debunked. they've done studies on pain-free people who don't have back pain and haven't gone on to develop back pain, and it shows that there is no normal activation pattern, and often the delay is so fine. You can't feel it with your hand. It's like milliseconds, right? So plus, if we think about how fat is distributed between the glute and the hamstring, often the glute has a little bit more fatty tissue over the top. You can't even feel it contract as quickly anyway. So this is just an example of like creating an artificial problem and then selling the solution.
Yep. That's how you make money.
And there's no basis to that as a practice. It's not actually helping people, and it's probably just creating, again, another artificial barrier to engage in movement. Imagine someone who goes to the gym, who trains regularly, seeing that, doing the test, freaking out, pulling back from deadlifting and squatting and going doing a course of therapy they didn't need.
Yep.
Like, I just think that as a practice, it needs to go.
I agree. And you, again, your country, do whatever you want, but I would add that into mine as well. We spoke about this a bit, but you are not allowed to have a repeat customer from a challenge if they've gained more than 10% of their weight back within 1 year. 20% max. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
That's fair. It'll stop a lot of gyms from making money off people that aren't doing very well.
Yeah, I think that would probably be something that I would like to implement in my dictation too. Is I suppose maybe not even that rule specifically, but more just better regulation of these challenges. A few of the like I could tell you from, and this is personal experience again. I'll use that disclaimer, but I have seen numerous clients who've come through where their problem is simply overuse from a gym challenge, and it's often somebody who's highly motivated to start exercising, and they get chucked into this 6-week challenge where they're doing 6 days a week and sometimes 2-a-days, and they've got no training background at all, and nothing to account for prior injuries or intensity and those sorts of things. And it's just, it's a classic training error. And I just think, again, that creates another barrier for engagement with exercise, because it's very easy for someone to feel very discouraged when they develop an overuse problem from just training far too much that can linger for months, because they often do. It causes them to disengage with exercise again. It's very easy just to...
All in and then out again.
Absolutely. So I think we need to just be way better about how we, as a fitness culture and more broadly, sort of approach these things.
Step further, just row down now. Everyone cannot be on the same calories and macros.
Yeah, big time.
Like, they have to be individualized. If you're going to go that way, they have to be individualized. Because I can name at least 5 gyms that are very popular that stick every female and every male on the same calories with the same meal plan.
Name them.
That's wild.
No. I won't do it. But yeah, it is wild. You got any more, Sean? Or are you just going to, I think I've got one of yours wrote down. Wrote down here. I've got a couple more. We cannot label foods good or bad. We cannot tell people blankly not to eat that because it is bad for you. Okay, we should get rid of this very early on. If we do want to describe foods, we need to say more nutrients dense and less nutrient dense. Because I think once you remove the label of good or bad, labeling good and bad, then you remove guilt attached to food. And once guilt is removed from food, then our relationship with food and dieting and whatever we want to do is a hell of a lot easier.
What about the star rating system?
Yeah, but that we know that. So,
would you have something more?
I'd go
like
calorie
that to
content
give people
on all foods
on the front end, big.
But there is calories on all foods anyway.
Yeah, but like at restaurants, and
kilojoules a lot of the time though, not calories, which I know is like that's a straight sum, but it's still annoying.
Set to confuse people.
Yeah,
me.
I don't think calories should be. I'm sort of torn between.
Well,
like,
mate, this is my country.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. You can have calories on your menus. I wouldn't have them on all my menus. Because a lot of restaurants now are doing that.
Yeah.
But you can actively, which is fair, go and ask for a menu without the calories on. So if you do have an eating disorder, you can go. I know you probably are like, no, fuck you, in your country. Look at the calories.
We wouldn't have anyone with eating disorders.
Because you removed good and bad from foods. Gone, which I think is good, because I do think we need to remove that early, because that is one of the biggest barriers,
again,
I think, at the beginning.
I think to play devil's advocate for my country,
but
if there was more information around food, you'd have parents who knew more about what's what within foods.
But what sort of things are you looking for?
Well, if you understand where your calories are coming from, what macronutrients and micronutrients are spread across different food groups and what is what, like obviously through critical thinking in school, which we've already implemented, people will be able to decipher, you know, the bullshit when it comes to food. But I think through the power of education, you're empowering people to make better decisions. It's the same as like putting the price of food. It's like sometimes ignorance is bliss and you don't want to know how much shit costs, but it's the same as with calories. You want to know where your calories are going and where they're being spent.
Yep, I'm there to some extent. I'm with you. But then I think
you can have birthdays off.
But then it's just, then we're just going into like just being fat, about fat, where I think we have to understand maybe from a school standpoint, like what does sugar do? Do you know what I mean? What can glucose do? What's carbohydrate? What's fat?
Yeah.
Education, do you know what I mean? So we're just about that education pre.
Yeah. But again, it can help athletes as well. That's what my country's full of athletically driven people who just want to get the boat best out of their performances. So they want to know what foods they can have.
Can I come? No, you're not allowed in. Sorry.
Don't be the standard.
Yeah. Great. Look, great ideas, great concepts. One barrier I see to implementation though is just simply the whole topic of social determinants of health and the fact that like just knowing the information isn't always enough to change the behavior or lead to the appropriate action being taken simply because sometimes the barriers to doing so are just too great. So I'll use the
example. Talking about his laws, not
specifically when it comes to that, because yeah, you're right. Like obviously educating people and giving them that understanding is one thing, but then if their parents just are not well to do at all and all they can afford to put stuff on the table is just, you know, less nutrient dense food.
I actually have this as a little bit of a law, but absolutely.
Then ultimately it's like, well, we're just throwing information at them that they can't implement because the way their life is set up doesn't enable them to. So I guess from just an actual implementation perspective, we probably need to have some sort of subsidies to help people access.
Well, that's already school on foods anyway.
I'm talking more about like, so sorry, what do you mean by that?
So any food that's in the supermarket at the moment in a packet, there's always nutritional information on it regardless.
But the cost of that.
Yeah, so what I'm talking about is more the cost of that.
So
right?
Like a sliding scale, like nutrient-dense food should be subsidized a bit and then high-energy, low-nutrient should have a tax. So it's like the
What I'm saying. Yeah,
nutritional, I'm going to say healthy foods, more affordable, like fresh produce, because that is a thing, right? It's like you can get a $2 cheeseburger at McDonald's, but to get an actual nutrient-dense meal is $10 a person. So it's
that's right. And I know how we can make that affordable as well. If we legalize drugs and tax the shit out of them, then we can use the money from that.
Yep,
fund it all. Do you know?
Down with that.
Don't fact check me. if you Google quickly, how much money was spent on illegal drugs in the USA? Last year, illegal. The number will shock you.
But even
while we're doing like, that, how much do you reckon it is?
So, are you talking
$10 billion?
I'd say over $1 trillion.
I'm going to go $500 billion.
He'd logged in this morning.
I didn't. I did not.
If you're close to $500 billion,
$150 billion.
I'm closest.
I was well off.
Yeah, true.
$1 trillion
is so much.
That's annually. How crazy is that?
And then you could just put a GST vibe on that.
10%.
But then you could reinvest that into drug health and rehabilitation.
All the money that
you'd spend
on trying to stop it, you'd put into preventative care, psychologists.
Well, it's proven, right? That's why they have those safe centers in the US, in like New York. They have where they give you clean needles and they give you beds and stuff and they check your product to make sure it doesn't have any
like
shady
fentanyl
stuff
and stuff.
Yeah, so
they do it in festivals in Amsterdam.
They do it in ACT now.
With your tablet and they say, like, that one's okay, that one's okay, don't take that one. Don't take that one. That's bad for you.
They do it in Canberra now and they're rolling it out more and the demand, I think it was over Easter, was like it shut the centre down because they had so many people wanting to test their MDMA.
People are going to do stuff. You might as well make them pay for it proper. And safe.
Proper. So,
And tax them on it so you get extra money.
All right. No good or bad foods and good or bad drugs.
Legal drugs. What a utopia.
All right. I got two more. One of them, I got this one and I'd be interested in that. You have to hit a weight 3 times to call it your 1 rep max.
Oh, I was going to go.
Over how long?
Like that.
succession, whatever. Like you have to be able to hit it three times. Yeah, not like on the same day.
Yeah.
To call it your one. Because I've had some days in my life where everything's just clicking. Like everything's clicking. I'm feeling amazing. Like especially with a clean. You know, your technique, everything just matches and you're just like, your PB by like 10 or 15 kilos. But then you go back to doing your percentages and you're like, well, I can't do this. Not your true one.
But then you say redoing your PB is like kissing your sister.
Who says that?
You say that.
Sicko.
Yeah. You say that to everyone in the gym.
Yeah.
So then I'd be like, well, what am I doing again?
An old coach of mine. But again, because you're trying to prove that it's your one.
I don't need to prove it. I'll film it.
Practice.
And then it's proved.
Do you know what I mean? Do you, you get it?
I think I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Because I guess you could take it a step further and go, well, realistically, you're not really telling them what you're capable of in that moment, right? You're telling them what you have achieved at your best.
How does this play into menstrual cycles too? Because like
there's no menstrual cycles in my country.
Okay. I'm coming there. Yeah, luteal week and follicular. Do we break down our PB? So it's like, oh, I had it.
No, because your PB is your PB.
I'm sorry, did your country like deport all the women? is that what you're saying?
No, they're there.
Hysterectomies for everyone.
It's just because my scientists have already cured, they've already got a tablet for the pump.
Cured women.
Yes. Is your president Brick from Anchorman?
No.
He's concerned about attracting bears. He deported all the ladies. Like, what is going on?
Well, don't know. I'm still trying to figure stuff out.
In Beatty land.
Life would be so much better if we were gay.
He's got a very homoerotic country.
I wish I was gay.
We speak about
double income, no kids, share the same clothes.
You still have kids.
Yeah, adopt.
Share the same clothes.
Like
yeah,
get,
well,
but if it was me and you, could, you wouldn't. I'm a medium. Kind of. Yeah, you're a medium. Yours would be dead banging.
I can fit into a medium. Yeah.
Well, you just share my clothes. I can't share yours.
But then you'd like bicker at work because you work together too. It'd be exhausting. He'd get like his knickers.
I already spend more time with James than I do my wife.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, I'm a last one. I'm always torn with this one, right? You can't compliment people on their weight, right? So you can compliment them. I'm for compliments as long as what's said is a little bit better. So maybe like, hey, you look great, you look strong. Maybe you look really healthy. Maybe you push, but you can't go like, oh my God, well done. You look healthy because you've lost so much weight, or just have the thing driven by weight and therefore. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Skinny. Oh, you look so skinny.
You look so skinny. You look
Fuck
amazing.
Off.
Like things yeah. like that. Like I really hate them. From a disordered eating standpoint, or even eating disorder standpoint, I know someone, well, I know a couple where, you know, they're in a really bad place and then someone's gone up to them and said, oh my God, you look so lean. You look amazing. And then they've come to me and been like, this person's just said I'm amazing. I look so lean. But they have no idea about what the pain that person's coming from. But then in their head, they go, well, this is how I need to stay because I look amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's a really good idea. Like, because again, it's not what you're saying. It's how you read between the lines, isn't it? If by saying and complimenting them on their weight and how they look based on weight loss, you are validating that disordered thought process that like your worth is dictated by your body fat percentage or your weight, the number on the scales, those kinds of things. So yeah, it's something that I'd say over the last 3 years tried to be very mindful of, like very mindful of. And I do personally actively steer away from referencing that.
Yeah. I do. And I also, I do find it difficult at times because you do want to compliment people. Like even with my clients, I really try and stay away from complimenting their weight or anything like that. I try and stay away from them, but then it's like, where is that line?
Something that I've dabbled with, I guess, is like if somebody comes to me and they present that as like being a big deal. Okay. So they'll say like, you know, I've lost this much weight. I'm really pleased about that. Or I've, you know, changed my body composition, whatever it is. I think I'll like acknowledge it and say, oh, well, like, you know, well done. That must have been really hard for you to do. And just sort of acknowledge their efforts and acknowledge those things, but I'll move off it quickly.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't want to just ignore it completely if they're...
No, because it is tough because they should be celebrated as well, right? So
it depends if it's from hard work of nutrition, right?
Or but you don't always know. No, that's the thing.
Yeah, people don't say, it's like, I've worked really hard to change my body comp. People will be like, I've worked really hard to lose weight. That's what most people say.
Yeah.
But there's usually an element of training as well, right?
But if you go straight away, say if you lose or someone loses 20 kilos, right? And you're now in the position that you think you look amazing. And I go, you look amazing, you look so good. Anything more than that, any weight gain is going to be seen as a big negative. That's where the problem lies.
Well, that's like I've brought this up a few times, but with my kidney failure, I lost 14 kilos just because I was so sick I couldn't eat. And it is a constant battle for me because everyone would go, you look great. You've lost so much weight. I was like, I'm literally dying. Like I had big bags under my eyes. I was so sick. I couldn't even get out of bed some days. I was so exhausted. And people go, you look amazing. I was like, oh, is this what amazing looks like? And now I'm like,
I feel like shit.
I put on weight and I'm like, oh, could do with a bit of kidney failure right now. Like drop off some of the weight. I'm like, that is the worst thing to think, but my brain thinks it because I got told how amazing I looked. Like what the fuck is that? I would looked horrible too. I looked so sick. I just looked skinny.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't got one say more. It.
Go on then. Yeah. Good. Good.
If you're offended by something on social media, you can't have a rebuttal in the comments. You have to have a FaceTime.
FaceTime. Give me a number. Let's FaceTime. Fuck.
Yeah. It's just, that's just how it's going to work in my country.
Yeah.
Because people interact differently when they're face-to-face than they do within the comments.
There's like keyboard here worries, right?
Yeah.
Just trying to think of an example. Like,
say like anything that's like controversial or, you know, any like political statement where people are like going fucking in on each other, hard out, like saying really horrible shit in the comments.
I have another one.
Then you can go, you can like call them, be like, hey, man.
Can I speak on this a little bit? Because it's something that I've become really interested in, particularly around like, again, when I now encounter content within my field that I may not agree with or I feel is promoting the wrong stuff. I don't ever want to tackle that head on in the comments anymore because I see there's nothing positive that can be achieved from doing that. Okay, sure. I know there's an argument that perhaps if people who are on the fence are viewing that content, seeing an alternative opinion might help push them in the right direction. That's fine. But in terms of actually changing the person's mind, I'm never going to work.
No, it never works.
It never works. It's never productive because ultimately if I'm challenging someone in their professional space on stuff they're putting out there, I'm challenging their credibility. Mm-hmm. I'm also coming at their tribe identity intellectually. So we sort of know now that as human beings, we are very tribal in the way that we behave, like, you know, psychologically, I suppose you'd say. So, and people will value their tribe membership even when it comes to being, you know, intellectual over being correct. And having that kind of public challenge to your identity and your beliefs and things like that is almost like being confronted with a physical threat. There's brain MRI studies that prove this. They get people, as you used the political example before, if you get people from one political ideology and confront them with a statement that challenges their ideology, the stuff in their brain that lights up it's like they're being faced with a physical threat. Yeah. So, and furthermore, I think particularly on a personal level, like if you've got somebody that you know who's sharing something that you don't agree with or that you feel is misinformation, challenging them in the comments and grandstanding on them, like it's not a great look because you're ultimately just putting them down. They're just going to double down on what they believe anyway. Definitely. For the reasons I said before. But then also you got a question, well, what are your motivations? Are you trying to help this person or are you just trying to look smart?
Yeah, I think I'd say it depends.
It does depend. Meaningful it's case to case.
Comments, though, it's like, why did you do it like this? And having that conversation, then them replying and going, well, I chose to feed, because I work on the ABC's social accounts and we get a lot of shitty comments and that we actually take the time to reply to that and go, well, that's actually style guide. And that in quote marks is how that's presented. You've read that a different way to how other people. And so other people then read that comment and then they go, oh, okay, I'm not angry anymore.
So
I think it's important to allow for dialogue and that back and forth, which is maybe where a FaceTime would
be beneficial.
Or even a DM, right? Like just actually, like particularly with someone I know and I'm just, and it has to, I think the way you frame it isn't you're wrong, you're like, that's horrible. It's more like, hey, I just want to understand more about where you're coming from. Where is this information covered? Like express some curiosity.
Ask a question.
Yeah, exactly. Get them to explain like why they felt the need to post it, why they believe that, things like that. Because look, there's a chance that you might learn something from that. But there's also a chance that you can at least then engage in a more productive conversation versus saying, no, that's wrong, that's stupid, those kind of things. Like it's just not helpful.
No, it turns into, like you would see it all the time at the ABC how it turns into this absolute like clusterfuck of like people just going at each other.
Yeah.
Whereas if you take the time to sit down and have a conversation or direct direct message. People tend to interact in a different way. And again, at the crux of things, people have way more in common than they do different. So if you, eventually you can find some common ground, it makes the discussion a whole lot easier to have.
There's always going to be attacking in the comments because one of you is just trying to win.
Yep. And neither of you want to look wrong. No. We all, by default, we don't like being wrong, and we will just fight tooth and nail to avoid that.
But I do see some really good outcomes.
Yeah, but
in
ABC, you're talking
too.
Thousands of comments on stuff. Yeah. It's not like the odd message. There's so much. All right, let's wrap it up there. Hopefully you enjoyed that. That was a bit of fun. Just remember, the sponsors of the podcast, LSKD, at checkout, you can just say the word rebuild, and you will get 10% off. But thanks for listening. See you next week.